We thought about it, we really found out, and we proved it for ourselves. Fidel Castro overthrew a dictator down in the nation of Cuba amidst cries of freedom and deliverance. Let's get this country back on the right track, he screamed. And so, finally, when Castro's rifle squads were very, very busy in annihilating and assassinating all of his enemies and anyone who would try to oppose him, people began to realize that they had gotten rid of one autocratic, tyrannical leader only to jump into the arms of another one, one who would countenance absolutely no opposition whatsoever. Why, his rifle squads were even so polite, they let some of those generals, if you remember seeing some of the pictures in some of the weekly magazines, why, they let them stand there in front of their own graves and give them the courtesy of allowing them to give the countdown in their own voices for the assassination squad. Uno, dos, tres, fuego, and wham, and they flew over backward into the trench that had been scooped out for them. So when Castro finally fulfilled all of his promises to the people of Cuba, who believed they were getting rid of a dictator, they found out they had jumped into the arms of a different kind of a dictator. Instead of just an ultra-rightist, nationalistic, autocratic, egotistical tyrant who was Cuban and nationalist in nature, now they had jumped into an absolute, autocratic, tyrannical dictator of the Marxist-Leninist stripe with his brother Che Guevara, who of course ended up dead later on. Or you can look at old Mzee, Jomo Kenyatta, a man who drank, apparently human, along with goat's blood in the Mau Mau rites. Old Mzee, when he began to scream Uhuru, he was going to give freedom to all of these wonderful people in the nation of Kenya. Now, you have to say that on balance, the government, the black African government of Kenya, became, later on, as the years went by, one of the most stable of many of the other black African nations. But you have to look, too, at the balance of that statement, because there is not a great deal of stability in any of the single parties or the dictatorships of the various nations of Africa, and it seems like the United Nations, the United States, and Britain are trying to eradicate the last semblance of democracy from Southern Africa based upon racist points of view. But here was old Mzee, and very shortly after this former criminal, who had been the leader of the horrible Mau Mau uprisings and the assassinations of who knows how many hundreds of innocent whites with their babies and children, he took reins of government and systematically began ripping off the country. His wife, even though the government had passed legislation that it was against the law to export such things as lion and cheetah and so on, skins and zebra skins and the like, was found to be at the background of a lot of that heavy traffic and everything from illegitimate or illicit ivory to cheetah skins. At the same time, there was quite a busy export trade in rare woods, even though Mzee's government had passed laws against the export and the cutting down of some of the hardwoods of the forests of Kenya. It was interesting, too, how some of the leaders of opposition parties, very educated men, one of them who was one of the most loved of the nation of Kenya, you might have remembered this, you might have remembered the great national and international news it made about the funeral procession, and how some of the people in one of the native villages down near a game preserve saw this big black limousine drive up one night. And then they heard a lot of screams and shouts and cries and firing of automatic weapons, and in the morning they cautiously went out and discovered a bullet-ridden body. Well, here was the leader of the opposition party to old Jomo Kenyatta, Mzee. And it had been discovered that he, this opposition leader, had been picked up by Mzee's own private bodyguards in Mzee's own car, apparently, the day before. So it was kind of interesting how these things happened. And here was a man who has been stated by some people to be one of the greatest of all the African leaders. Yes, from Cuba to Angola, from Vietnam to Cambodia, and from Mozambique to Uganda, people have believed the big lie. In government, in education, in religion, people go rushing off after this or that ideology. At last, they say, we have discovered the one ultimate solution, and we have also discovered the one final ultimate culprit. So, equipped with the knowledge, they have a scapegoat and they have a deliverer. Millions of human beings have gone rushing off after this or that ideology, and millions of human beings have died. In Hitler's case, the scapegoat was a race of people, the Jews. In other people's cases, it might have been some of the old imperial people of the nation of the Soviet Union when the Bolsheviks started their revolution. You know, I think one of the most mind-boggling things I ever heard or ever read was in a book called A Man Called Intrepid. Now, you know, dictators do not groom successors. That's just an axiomatic statement. You can put that down in your mind and remember that. Dictators do not groom successors. And dictators do not tolerate potential successors, people who might look like they have the capability of taking over. If you study the political scene in Kenya, you'll find an example of that, of how systematically there was butchery and how the same thing is going on in Uganda today, because Idi Amin is getting rid of the intelligentsia, and that is pretty well true. Anytime a tyrannical dictator takes over, he is going to have hatred toward so-called intellectuals, the intelligentsia, people who are scholarly, people who have any intelligence, any brains, or able to really think for themselves. Well, of course, they become arch enemies, and he's got to try to get rid of them to put them down at any cost. Now, dictatorships breed fear, and fear breeds, of course, suspicion, and suspicion breeds more fear. Now, this was true of Joseph Stalin, who was one of the world's most brutal and bloodthirsty dictators of all time, and I think in one of the most incredible coups in all of history. When you read in the book called A Man Called Intrepid of how Heinrich Heydrich, who was one of the leaders of German intelligence in the beginning of the Third Reich, managed to forge hundreds of documents, letters, everything of the kind, and to allow them to be leaked into the hands of the Soviet officers so that people very close to Stalin got a hold of some of these documents. And as a result, unbelievably, Stalin accepted this, believed it, because Stalin, like any other dictator, believed in his heart. He just wanted to believe, I guess. He was practically paranoid about the idea that there had to be a gigantic conspiracy against him to put him out of power, to overthrow him, or to have him assassinated or removed. Every dictator believes that. They believe with all of their being until they become sick with paranoid feelings that there has got to be some kind of a great conspiracy to get rid of them. So when this information was leaked to Joseph Stalin, he stood up against the wall and had shot 35,000 men. Out of 11 offices in the Supreme Soviet of the War Ministry, at the ministry, cabinet level, all 11 of them were shot. You'll read in that book how it lists, 187 or so generals. I forget the exact statistics, but it's unbelievable that, say, out of 187, about 168 or so of them were ended up against the wall dead. It'll list 300 and so many colonels, and out of that, almost all of them were killed. Almost the entire Soviet officer corps was obliterated in this vast Russian army purge that took place at the orders of Joseph Stalin, based upon faked documents, absolute false letters that were deliberately forged and then allowed to slip into Stalin's hands. And because that man was such a blind dictator, he got rid of 35,000 innocent men, not a one of whom knew what in the world was going on, had nothing to do with any alleged coup against Joseph Stalin. But that is the way of a dictatorship. Today, millions of people know what they've been told. But do they really? What do you know in your mind? I mean, you have beliefs, you have a system of values, you might say, or you have assumptions or impressions or convictions and opinions. You have certain knowledge, you feel, about communism. Now, I've found that many Americans don't even know what communism is. They've never read a book on it. They've never studied it. They don't know what the Communist Manifesto says. They've never read anything about Marx or Trotsky or Lenin or anybody else. They just know that, kind of like the Archie Bunkers of the world, that everybody's a communist. Anybody you don't like, whether it's a neighbor that backs over your pansy bed, or it's some politician or a newscaster you don't like, or a religionist you don't like, he's got to be some dumb communist, as a lot of people mispronounce it. But they don't know what communism is. They don't know what's wrong with it. They don't know why it is bad, and it is. It's wrong. It's bad. But why is it? Do you know? No, most Americans don't. They don't know. Many of our millions of American people don't even know what are the basic differences between the Republican and the Democratic Party. We have religious convictions and ideas about heaven and hell and the life after death and about Jesus Christ and the Bible, and we're very glandular. We can say, well, I'll tell you this, I know this, and we don't know. because we haven't proved, we haven't read, we haven't researched for ourselves. You know, it's time you began to look into the Bible and to look into what you believe, whether I'm talking about politics or the economy or sociological conditions or whether I'm talking about religion, and to do what the Bible says, prove all things. Now, you know, when you read something in huge capital letters about a quarter of an inch or half an inch high, underlined and three exclamation points, that's a big sounding word out there. But does that make it true? You know that a lie printed in color is still a lie, and the truth in an old smudgy mimeograph machine is still the truth. The truth in the mouth of a babe, ill-pronounced and barely understood, is the truth. And a lie in the mouth of the most articulate person you've ever heard is still a lie. You ought to understand that. The Bible says, prove all things. Now here's a chance for you to prove something about the gospel of Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Is the gospel the gospel about the church? Is it a gospel of salvation? Is it the gospel about Christ's person? Is it a news announcement about a coming future world government? Is it about the kingdom of Great Britain? Is it about a church here on this earth? Is it the gospel of salvation? Is it the gospel of hope, the gospel of faith? Just what is the real gospel? In a brand new booklet that you can have absolutely free of charge if you write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525 in Tyler, Texas. I'll send you this free booklet, What is the Real Gospel? And you'll be amazed. Here's a chance to prove something, to get out a pencil and to research it in your own Bible. You prove whether or not this booklet is wrong or whether it's right by looking into your own Bible, and it's absolutely free of charge, The Real Gospel. Write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710. Would you do the favor of please telling me the call letters of the radio station to which you're listening? Tell me the name of this radio station, and if you want the telephone number, you can call and ask any kind of a question you would like. I don't care. I'll take a lot of the calls myself if I'm here. It's area 214-561-2525. That's area 214-561-2525. Or write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas, 75710. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.